Welcome to St. Columba Anglican Church in Beaumont, Alberta. I'm Stephanie London, and it's Sunday, December 4th, 2022, the second Sunday of Advent. Our text for this week comes from Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 to 10. My dad has a Far Side cartoon stuck to the side of his fridge, from back when he got the newspaper, and back when Gary Larson was still drawing his absurdly witty comics. The one I'm thinking of, the one that lives on in a clipping under a magnet in my dad's kitchen, goes like this. A woman is walking down a path. She's wearing a polka-dotted house dress, a string of pearls, and horn-rimmed glasses. Her hair is piled into a tall, tidy beehive. In her left hand, she's holding the handle of a vacuum cleaner so that she can push it along as she walks. She looks like she should be in a carpeted living room somewhere in suburbia. But instead, the path she travels is leading her through a dense and ominous forest. Dark trees loom over her. To one side, a crow eyes her from its perch on a dead branch. You can feel that she's isolated and alone. The shadows are almost alive and ready to pounce. The caption reads, "The woods were dark and foreboding, and Alice sensed that sinister eyes were watching her every step. Worst of all, she knew that nature abhorred a vacuum." Coined long before the Far Side, that phrase "nature abhors a vacuum" dates back to Aristotle, who observed that no true vacuums must exist on Earth because the force of pressure from outside it sweeps in to correct the imbalance. Something always comes in to fill the void. Even though Aristotle had not yet met poor Alice and her doomed household appliance, he pointed out a truth that would give us our 21st century wordplay. If you take something away, it creates a vacuum, an empty space, a void of nothing, and will suck everything else in. Taking something away creates these two states, the thing and the vacuum, the object and the whole that it leaves. One is weighty and real, the other is only defined by absence. The thing has substance, matter, mass, and influence. What's left just exists because the thing has gone. The vacuum is a non-entity, an empty space, powerless and void. Like the pit to the pile of dirt we dug out of it. The empty cup to the coffee we drank. The empty room is nothing to the person who moved out. The friend leaves and only a vacuum of longing remains. Take away the music and you get silence. Take away the color and you're left with gray. Take away the anger, and the space that remains, is that harmony? Take away the war and call what's left peace? If we stopped some people on the street outside on this second Sunday of Advent and asked them what peace meant, some of us might indeed define peace as the absence of war. It's a valid definition. We long for what will remain when conflict is over. But that definition also makes these positive qualities, the harmony, the friendship, the peace, sort of an afterthought. More like the powerless vacuum than the thing with real power and authority that left. If peace is just the space that war is left behind, then war is the thing that has influence and power. Then war is the thing that looms dark and dangerous and foreboding. Conflict has teeth and claws and authority. It's the thing that fills the spaces and creeps through and takes over. It means that peace is only what's left when you take that away. But as we heard in Isaiah this morning, the reality is in fact the opposite. Peace is so much a part of who God is, so much a quality of the hope God has and the world God is recreating. So much an expression of the love that defines God's character and activity, that it cannot possibly be the vacuum, the remainder, the leftovers. Instead, peace is the thing with substance, the thing that moves, the thing with authority and force and influence and drive. Peace is the thing that transforms hearts, that fills violent voids, that turns everything before it to good. When we reject peace, God's peace, then the space it leaves is where conflict and rage exists. Only in the absence of peace do they take hold. So we take heart, because the good news is that spaces will be filled. Vacuums can't sustain themselves for long. Peace will reign, God promises. Persistent peace will win. Even until the calf and the lion and the fatling will share the same bed of straw. I don't have much direct experience with lions, but this summer I heard a bishop from Kenya talk about growing up around them. He said that when he was a boy, his house was on stilts, and at night the lions would congregate under the floorboards. And their roars were so loud and so fierce that the house literally shook around him as he lay in bed praying that he wouldn't fall out. And he still carried a scar from his first lion hunt that almost went terribly wrong. Lions are not safe. Lions are not kind. Lions live to hunt and destroy. If I were that child, safety would mean the absence of lions. Take them away and I would no longer be afraid. But God has different plans. The impossible idea that one day lions like that would meekly follow the leading of a little child, would curl up with the calves. That's what God promises will happen when peace so fills every violent vacuum in every heart, every will, everywhere, that the vacuum of cruelty just can't possibly remain. The wolf shall live with the lion, or with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together. The young of the cows and the bears will lie down together. The lion will eat straw like an ox. In the promise of this vision, God hasn't removed the predators. God hasn't taken the lions away and left only the grazing animals. Instead, God has so transformed these hunters, hearts, purposes, instincts, everything, that no violence is left. To the point where wolves no longer see lambs as prey, but as equals. There is no power differential, no abuse. God's peace has filled them so completely that there's no room left for aggression. God the Father sends Jesus Christ, anointed by the Holy Spirit, to sweep through God's creation with justice and righteousness and peace. To the extent that even the lions and the poisonous snakes are healed of their desire to hurt and destroy. God's peace has substance and power to heal and transform, to restore and live. We receive with faith this promise that it is even now being made real. It's interesting that these 10 verses from Isaiah 11 are peppered with the word shall. 19 times in 10 verses. From a branch shall grow out of the root of the stump of Jesse's family, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. To his dwelling shall be glorious. And that should tell us that God has guaranteed what Isaiah saw in his vision. It has not yet been fully accomplished, but it will come to pass. God's peace will overcome all the violence in the world. God will fill every space with peace. Advent reminds us that we live in this already but not yet time, between our now and God's future, between the desert and the promised land, between the violent vacuums of our world and the certainty that one day God's promised reign of peace will come. And God's peace is already breaking in. Maybe even looking like someone walking beside Alice and her vacuum, someone so powerfully bright that they flood into the frightening shadows of the dark forest, someone whose glory is the thing with substance that moves and grows. Every valley will be raised up and the mountains brought low, until God's promise is completely fulfilled. Every heart will be made new until the wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. They will not hurt nor destroy on all God's holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea.